fail-safe trigger lockdown call like the dry clean slate. Quick sound the alarm, no escape from the truth and the weight of it all. I am caught in the web of a lie, and the bitch of it all is that I'm running from the desire of the people to whom I belong. At the end of the day, you can tell me I'm wrong, cause you went to all of this trouble. Chapter 42, Collapsing Possibilities. Mace's head was aching, and he blamed Kenobi. It was a small, petty thing to deny the man his rightful title, even in his own head, but it was all Mace could do as he stared down Queen Organa in the Hidden Temple's meeting room. He could not afford to show any sign of the arguments that had raged through the ship's hallways mere hours ago. If he had learned anything after the Order's exile, it was that they could not afford to show the slightest bit of disunity or weakness to the larger galaxy, where they would be immediately set upon by whatever lowlifes populated that particular quadrant. Some would argue that the royalty and senators that made up the High Command of the Resistance were not lowlifes. Mace, however, with all the experience he had with diplomacy, would disagree. No matter how sweetly confused Queen Organa seemed. "I'm sorry," she was saying slowly. "The Resistance was under the impression that the Jedi Order had lent their assistance with your full knowledge and blessing. Are you saying that this was untrue?" Mace just barely kept himself from grinding his teeth together. "We hadn't finished deciding." The little bodyguard the Queen had brought with her made a soft gasp, and Mace found himself regretting letting even that much slip out. "Damn it! Why did Ta have to be so nosy? Why did she have to check exactly how many Jedi had left for the training exercise? Why didn't Kenobi just tell him what was going on before Ta could blindside him with it? Even if it was the right thing to do, as Kenobi had claimed, they should have gone through the council, not lied and haired off on their own with a quarter of the fleet." "What my colleague here is trying to say," Kenobi interjected smoothly, moving up to stand beside Mace, "is that, unfortunately, there seems to have been a miscommunication within the Order. A few of our younger and more hot-tempered members apparently believed that we had decided not to help when that was very much not the case." He raised his eyebrows and dipped his head slightly, as if making a joke about an old experience with a friend. "I'm sure that you've run across the same problem more than once yourself in those young politician camps that you're so fond of." Queen Organa's lips twisted just a little in amusement. "This doesn't get Kenobi off the hook," Mace reminded himself acidly. "He was the one that encouraged such a misunderstanding." "Well," Queen Organa said, folding her hands demurely in front of her, "I cannot lie. I do understand how one can say one thing, and it seems that the young ones hear another thing entirely. I suppose that such a thing simply didn't occur to me due to the presence of so many Jedi Masters. I would have thought that they would have restrained such exuberance." Sourly, Mace remembered that Unduly was the other ringleader here. She too would have to be talked to for her actions. All of them would. Kenobi chuckled, soft and friendly, like they were two friends chatting over tea. "Come now, I think we both know how intoxicating enthusiasm can be." Queen Organa chuckled as well, but her eyes were calculating. This was why Mace hated politicians, always looking for an angle. Behind him, he could feel the others shifting unhappily as well. In any case, Mace interjected, folding his arms and radiating disapproval. You did not answer my question. Where are our people? A pulse of annoyance buzzed at his shields from Kenobi. Mace ignored it and pinned Organa with a look. It was not as effective as he wished. The Queen merely looked back at him steadily, clearly unmoved by him. My apologies. I forgot that you had left for your discussion before our scout returned. Oh? Master Rancisis slithered closer, raising a bushy eyebrow. Did she hear something interesting, then? If you can call orders to slaughter every child not converted to the Imperial mode of thinking by the end of the week interesting, then yes, I suppose she did. Organa's tone had dipped into something icy. The Resistance counted itself lucky that your Jedi arrived in time to take part in the rescue. Without them, I don't doubt that our casualties will be much higher. A comlink beeped. Behind Organa, her bodyguard started and looked embarrassed. Sorry, she said, pulling her comm out. She glanced down, checking who was calling. Mace tried not to think uncharitable thoughts. Then her eyes widened. Your Majesty, she said, putting a hand on Organa's shoulder. It's High Command. Mace raised an eyebrow, and the girl flushed. Her eyes darted downwards. Wonderful. Was the Resistance worried that they would do something untoward to the Queen? Mace let himself feel a twist of irritation at that. Desperate as they were, the Jedi had never stooped so low as to engage in piracy. The fact that the Resistance was even considering it...
Master Jedi.
The crisp Coruscanti tones of a Core World Senator broke through his dark thoughts. The fuzzy, flickering light of a holo sprang into being in front of them from the comm, resolving itself into the white-draped figure of Mon Mothma, the senator from Chandrilla. Senator, Mace replied, pulling himself back to the here and now. I assume that there is a reason for this interjection?
Quite.
It was hard to tell, what with how fuzzy hollows could get, but Mace was rather sure that her face was lined with tension.
We just received news from the raid team, and we would like to request a favor from the Order.
Externally, Mace kept his face still and serene. Internally, though, he raised an eyebrow and grumbled. A favor, eh? And how much would this favor cost them, then? Go on.
We have received a message from General Cleve's people that the plan has gone awry. We had counted on keeping control of communications, but it seems that one of the Imperials at the Academy managed to slip a transmission out past us.
Mace's irritation fled as he connected the dots. They're about to be facing an Imperial fleet, then. Force. The names of the people and ships that had gone on this foolhardy excursion flicked through his mind, too vast for individuals and forming an overwhelming shape. The manpower and ships? They could not afford to lose that. Not if the Order wished to survive. You want us to go to their rescue, then? It wasn't a question, and from the look on Mothma's face, he knew that he was right.
Yes,
she said unnecessarily.
In the time it takes for us to organize our people and prepare our ships, the Imperials will have already arrived. We know that this is a lot to ask.
Do you? Mace thought sourly. Do you really?
Especially with how communications between our organizations have been. But right now, you are the only ones who have a hope of getting there in time. Can we count on you for this?
Could they count? Could they? Mace knew the Order was divided. He knew that it was shattered, fractured, all those many synonyms for broken ever since Order 66. Since the Clone Wars started, even. Their exile had only broken them more. spread thin, begging for fuel and money and food, unable to replenish their dwindling numbers. Bitterness had risen, black and strong as poison. And then they had found out about these children. These force sensitives that would need rescue and guidance. Children that the Force insisted were important, insisted that he pay attention to. Mace wanted to pinch the bridge of his nose. Children that, technically speaking, they couldn't afford to rescue. He looked up the facts after Master Kota had brought it up, and the blind man had been right. On Flimsy, it didn't look likely that they would be able to support many more in their current situation. Less, with several of their ships undoubtedly being lost. But Mace clenched his jaw as the familiar, tight feeling of a shatter point stretched his skin as tight as a drum. This was an important moment. A moment that the future turned on. And Mace had seen the recording of Bridger's interrogation. He had heard what the Inquisitors had done to the boy, were still doing to the children that had been left behind. He had almost wished that he could have brought a highlights reel of it after that disastrous meeting. Then perhaps the naysayers would have been able to understand that feeling of urgency that thrummed in his bones. The shatter point was only tightening further, until it felt that his skin would tear from his bones. He knew what the right answer was, and the fur it would set off in the rest of the fleet. Mace breathed in, breathed out. "Yes," he said. "For this, to give your ships time to arrive, you can depend on us." Kanan was trembling as the lift beeped between floors. The Force was thrumming in his ears, chanting, "Up, up, up!" And he didn't know why when he could feel his Padawan several floors below and receding further with every beep. He needed to get to Ezra. He'd felt that horrid, jagged bolt of pain from his... The door chimed as it opened, and Kanan bolted out, the Force now chanting, "Forward, forward, forward!" His chest quickly began to burn as he ran, but he couldn't stop. Not with Ezra's pain and fear sweeping through him like a storm surge. He'd been so stupid. So self-absorbed. How could he have thought that staying away from Ezra was the right thing to do? He'd seen Ezra's face, seen the pain in his eyes as Kanan had turned away from him. Hell, he'd felt it, too, until he'd focused on blocking off the now obvious bond between them. Everyone else had seen it, too. Kanan gritted his teeth and willed his legs to move faster. Hera had tried to reach out to him, show him the damage he was doing, but he refused to look. Zeb had tried to talk to him, too, punching the wall in frustration when he had refused to listen before, then devoting himself to distracting Ezra from Kanan. Even Gray and Janice had stepped up, he knew. He'd seen the volunteer lists for that first ship with Ezra on board, and seen their names at the very top. And all he'd been able to think of was his own shame, his own fears, his own inadequacy. Well, no more. The Force was not a deity, but Kanan swore to it anyway. If he reached Ezra in time, he'd stop it. He'd pull his head out of his ass and remember that Ezra was the one hurting here, not just him. He'd put the relationship back to rights, no matter how much groveling was needed. And Jedi or no, he would teach what he knew about the Force to the best of his ability. He would raise a good boy, a good man, one that didn't run from his responsibilities or guilt. He would stay by Ezra's side for as long as he needed him, and watch him grow with pride. The Force wrapped around him like what he imagined a parent's hug felt like. He could feel the approval around him, the rightness. He stopped abruptly in the middle of the bridge that he'd entered. The thoughts that had been nipping at his heels drained away. The world that had seemed so fuzzy in the darkness had snapped into focus. He could see the academy in crystal clarity, but the dark was no longer there. And he could see Ezra below him, hurting. He knew what he had to do now. His pistol was holstered and the pieces of his lightsaber in his hands before he had time to think. Had this been another less urgent time, he would have perhaps pondered as he twisted the pieces back together, taken the moment to say a few words. But this was not a less urgent time. So he snapped the pieces together quickly and ignited the blade with a quick snap of his wrist. The bright blue blade sank through the floor like a hot knife through blue butter. Kanan spun in a circle, heard the hiss and groan of metal struggling to hold up his weight. The two ends of the glowing line kissed, and then he was falling. Thunder rumbled as Kanan fell through the air, lightning arcing through the clouds above. The metal that he had cut from the floor fell ahead of him, a dark, twisting shape. Rain slapped against his face, but he only barely noticed as it reflected the light from his blade into hundreds of dazzling jewels. He only had eyes for the bridge directly below him. He twisted his body into a diver's position, his blade held out in front of him. He could feel himself speeding up, rain making him squint his eyes. Ezra's pain throbbed through their bond, and he tried to push comfort towards the boy. It was falling fast now, catching up with the part of the floor that he had cut out. It twirled through the air, the edges still glowing. Kanan cut through it with a flick of his wrist, the action easier than the hundreds of times that he'd done it as a Padawan. A fragment of an old poem he'd read as a youngling in class flashed through his mind. The Force is my ally, and a powerful ally it is. The bridge where Ezra was close now. Kanan twisted his body again, this time putting his legs underneath him. The Force was all around him, wrapping him up in protection. He crossed his arms in front of his face and pulled the Force with his will, smashing through the glass and landing, the broken shards hanging in the air all around him. He saw his enemy now, standing in front of him with a red blade. He could feel his Padawan behind him, hurt and afraid. Not for long, though. He was here, and he was not leaving Ezra. Never again. Sabine's hands were shaking. Her eyes were blurring, not with tears, but from the chunk of metal that had collided with her head as she had thrown her explosives at the charging Inquisitor. Damn it! Damn it! It had been going so well, all according to plan. And then the Seventh Sister had charged, and Sabine had panicked as pain lanced through her head, throwing her explosives at the woman even though she was too close. And Ezra had paid the price. Her eyes fell against her will to the stump where his left leg had been just a minute ago, before he had pushed her out of the way of the Inquisitor's flying lightsaber. She swallowed back a bit of vomit and held him closer, his pale face tucked under her chin and breath huffing against her neck, and squeezed the trigger on her blaster again. The Seventh Sister knocked it away with contemptuous ease, along with the few bolts that were still coming from the other bridge.
"Just give up," she hissed. "You're only delaying the inevitable."
Sabine grit her teeth, because as far as she could tell, that was true. She was supporting Ezra with one arm and shooting with the other. She didn't know what the Inquisitor had done, but all of a sudden the amount of shots coming from the other bridge had fallen, allowing the woman to creep closer. Sabine would have needed both hands to attach Ezra to the rescue line anyway, but now with him missing a leg... Sabine squeezed off another few shots. She couldn't give up. Not here. The Seventh Sister knocked those bolts aside as well.
"This is getting repetitive," she warned. "Leave the boy and run, or I'll be keeping you as a pet as well, sweetheart."
Her face split into a nasty grin.
And I think you know what that would be like. After all, I've already given you a preview, haven't I?
Sabine's wrist trembled at the reminder, and she ground her teeth. You're not touching either of us again, she snapped back. But her voice was shaking and weak. Seventh Sister laughed, her voice buzzing.
And who's going to stop me? You?
The glass above them shattered, allowing a figure to land in a crouch between the two of them. Sabine tried to jump back from the falling glass, hampered by Ezra's near-slack body, her heart pounding in her chest. What was this? Another Inquisitor trying to poach the Seventh Sister's kill? No. A smile split across Sabine's face as she suddenly recognized the person kneeling in front of her, shards of glass held in the air where they wouldn't hit anyone. It was Kanan, holding a blue blade that burned away the shadows that had filled the bridge. Kanan! The older man stood up out of his crouch, his face solemn and eyes far away. The feeling coming off of him made the hairs on the back of her neck stand up, but not in a bad way. Behind him, Sabine could see a new hail of bolts flying through the air and forcing the Seventh Sister back, but she didn't pay them any mind. All of her focus was on the man in front of her, with the burning blade in his hand, surrounded by shards of glass that seemed to no longer be affected by gravity. The look in his eyes... It made her think of the stories her mother and father had told her of the Kara, the ruling council of fallen leaders that looked on at them from the stars. That distant gaze she had imagined, that nevertheless saw so much. Then his eyes shifted, and he saw what was left of Ezra's leg. Any hint of distance fled from his eyes, and he was suddenly very much in the here and now, as he dropped to his knees in front of them. "What happened?" he asked, cupping Ezra's pale and sweaty cheek in his free hand. The glass had fallen as he knelt, a perfect circle except for the small clear part where he had passed through it to get to them.
"Sabine, what happened?"
Abruptly, what had happened to her in the last 2 hours hit her with all the gentleness of a hover train. A lump swelled in her throat, and her eyes began to sting. "She did," Sabine said, pointing toward the Seventh Sister, who was still being kept away from them by the fire from the other bridge. It was all she could say. Kanan's face darkened. Leaning back on his heels, he looked over his shoulder at the Seventh Sister. Then he turned back to them. Digging into his pocket, he pulled out a comm and handed it to Sabine. "Call for a pickup," he ordered, his tone brooking no argument. "Ezra's in no shape to try and cross to the other bridge." "The comms are jammed, though," Sabine said, taking the comm anyway. For a second, Kanan's eyes were far away. He tilted his head to one side, like he was listening to someone whisper in his ear. Then he smirked. "Not anymore, I don't think," he said, with such certainty that Sabine believed him. "Otherwise, stay back. This Inquisitor isn't going to hurt you anymore." He went to stand up, and Sabine grabbed his arm. "That's the Seventh Sister," she said. It felt important for him to know that now. "You know, the one that Ezra said..." She cut herself off as a terrifying look passed over Kanan's face. "Is that so?" His voice was calm. He looked back over his shoulder, and Sabine knew to her core that today would be the Seventh Sister's last. Shaking his head, he turned back to her and placed a hand on her shoulder, hesitated, then pulled her into a hug. Sabine stiffened, unsure of what to do. "You did really well," Kanan said softly. "You did good. I'm proud of you."
Now let me handle this.
Tears were burning tracks down her cheeks before she could stop them. The last time someone had said they were proud of her was when she was accepted into the Mandalorian Imperial Academy. After the rebellion and the Imperial reply, no one had been proud of her. Pulling back, Kanan didn't mention her tears, even as he flicked one away with his thumb. He turned to Ezra. Ezra, he said, before hesitating again. He bit his lower lip. Then he bent his head until their foreheads were touching. I'm sorry, he whispered, almost too low for Sabine to hear. I'm so, so sorry. Just hold on. Ezra didn't answer. He barely seemed aware that Kanan was there, his eyes half shut and rolled back to expose the whites. Small, soft breaths puffed past his lips. Kanan pulled back after a moment, then stood up. His lightsaber was still ignited, and he swished it through the air as he turned around, the rain hissing as it fell through the hole in the ceiling and hit the blade. The blaster shots from the other bridge had fallen off. The Seventh Sister was still standing, unfortunately, and glaring at them.
So another person has come to play, she noted, her face twisted in anger. Unfortunately, I don't need three toys.
Kanan's lightsaber moved through the air like a dream, liquid and graceful and impossibly fast, settling into a guard position. People aren't toys, he replied, his voice low and angry. And you will never hurt anyone ever again. That feeling was back now. That electric feeling that made the hairs on the back of Sabine's neck stand up and reminded her of old Mandalorian legends. Of last stands and glorious, terrifying battles. Battles that included Jedi. The legendary ones that had fought against Mandalore the Ultimate and the Neo-Crusaders. The warriors in those battles had described feeling the same sort of thing when a Jedi was using the Force and about to rip through them like a meteor through a starship hull. This was going to be a battle. A turning point, when history careened onto a new path. Sabine knew it, deep in her bones. And she wouldn't miss it for the galaxy. A moment. Just enough time to pull in a breath and let it out. And then the two Force users were hurtling towards each other, their blades about to clash. Fifth Brother could feel rain on his face. He could feel it on his chest, where his armor had been shattered. He could not feel it on his legs. He had lost. He had fought that little Jedi, that Jedi that could barely hold her own blade, and he had lost. He wished that the fall down to this bridge had broken his neck and not his back. Certainly, he would wish for it all the more once the Grand Inquisitor arrived. Well, maybe not. He could very easily be dead before then. Fifth Brother closed his eyes and tasted the salt of blood on his tongue. It hurt to breathe. Probably a punctured lung. If he was lucky, he would drown in his own blood before the Academy was reclaimed. The pain focused and centered him, brushing away the dark thoughts that clouded his mind. Yes, he would probably die here, and now was a good thing. Certainly less frightening than facing Darth Sidious for his failures. The darkness of Drummond Cass surrounded him and covered him, like slipping into a black ocean. He closed his eyes and breathed in, accepting the comfort that it offered. He would die here,
and be grateful. Surrounded by the darkness that he had served in life. Except a light. He could feel a light, like a candle, at the edges of his senses, teasing him with its warmth. Fifth Brother opened his useless eyes in irritation and reached out. If there was another Jedi down here... But as he reached out to try and locate the source of that light, the warmth it was emitting changed. Like holding a hand too close to the blade of his lightsaber, the warmth became harsher, overwhelming, until he felt the layers of his very self start to peel away. Fifth Brother gasped, and then regretted it as pain lanced through him. That was the light that he remembered, he thought, as he placed a weak hand on his chest. That burning, pitiless, white-hot heat that did not allow you to hide anything. It was nothing like the light of that Jedi that had just defeated him. And it was only growing stronger. He could feel it pressing up, up, up through the bridges that connected the towers, pressing into the cracks and crannies that the dark thrived in here, burning the shadows away with an inevitability that spoke of planets orbiting suns. A pitiless march towards an alignment that brooked no interference or difference. It spoke of the Jedi of old, the ones that had hunted down all of the Sith until there was only one left, had forced them to hide for 1,000 years. And yet, Fifth Brother could still feel a shadow in the horrifying center of that awful light. A slip of a shadow that he knew all too well. The Seventh Sister. What was she doing down there? The pain was no longer a detriment to his sensing. Drawing on it, he narrowed his focus, squinting through the light in a useless attempt to feel what was happening. She had left, he knew, to find the little brat, the Grand Inquisitor's pet. He hadn't been able to track her, too focused on his own mission, but he hadn't seen the boy at that ship. Had she found the boy? Was he that burning, pitiless light? No, Fifth Brother dismissed the thought as soon as it crossed his mind. The boy was weak. He had always been weak. Even his behavior during his graduation test had been weak, needing prodding to do what must be done. It had been pathetic to watch him grieve as he killed the plaything. No matter how Seven had crowed afterward, Fifth Brother had known that her supposed victory was meaningless. The Grand Inquisitor had only accepted the results because they needed the boy to take the position of High Interrogator as soon as possible. Against his will, the comparison his mind had made earlier rose up once again. The stories of the ancient Jedi, who had actually been somewhat worthy opponents, even as they were misguided by their weakness. Their light that had pushed back the dark. If the Jedi had found that strength again... No. No! His mind rebelled against the thought, even as it slipped sweetly past his defenses. Even one of those ancient Jedi would not have been able to stand against Drummond Kaas's inherent darkness. The doubt infuriated him, granting him new strength. Drawing on the anger, he focused and pierced through the blinding light. No, the light moved aside and let him see. There was a shadow and a star. They stood across on each other, each readying the power of their respective sides of the Force. The flickering shadow that was the Seventh Sister warped and sank into the darkness surrounding her. The light simply stayed still. Fifth Brother sneered to himself. A star, only capable of glowing and struggling to keep back the dark. There was silence, and stillness. A black pool with monsters underneath the surface. The star glowed, seemingly unaffected. And then the monsters attacked. The flickering shadow, Seventh Sister, surged forward, pulling the darkness along with her in an overwhelming wave, ready to crush the little star with the weight of the dark. But the dark didn't even touch it. Fifth Brother watched and couldn't understand. It was as if the dark parted, like it was truly a wave of water and not the greatest power in the galaxy. The shadow twisted in anger and came around again. The dark was thicker around it until it seemed to become the darkness itself, a mass of power that surely could not... Again, the dark parted. Again, the star stood untouched. No, not untouched. Now, if anything, it seemed even brighter. The shadow spat rage and hatred, frustrated ambition and cruelty. But the light only grew brighter. The stillness around it was draining away, and it was moving now. The slow but unstoppable revolution of a solar system. Gravity controlling all the objects within. The shadow wriggled and darted about, lashing out. But what could such tiny pricks do against such inevitability? Around the star, Fifth Brother could feel possibilities collapsing like dominoes falling over. He felt a dawning horror rise within him as he realized what he was watching, as he realized what the inevitable conclusion of this fight would be. He wanted to scream, to warn Seven of what was coming. But he couldn't. He was too far away and too injured from his fall. So all he could do was watch as the light collapsed in on itself, coiling around until it formed a blazing sword. No, a lightsaber. Like every movement the star had made, this one swung with an inevitable slowness. The shadow could run and twist and struggle all it wanted. This blow would be the last. The Seventh Sister was proud of her rank, proud of the power that she had gained with her own efforts, proud of the way she had cut off all of the attachments that had dragged her down in her early days with the Inquisitorius. She had been at her proudest the day that the Grand Inquisitor informed her that he was trusting her with breaking in their new High Interrogator. All of the Inquisitorius had known of their master's rage when he had discovered the fate of the original High Interrogator. To be entrusted with such an important task was a great mark of favor, one that promised even greater things in the future. And, oh, the task had been such fun! The first time she had walked into that cell and seen the boy's face, she had fallen in love. The way his chin had jutted out in stubbornness, the way his lips had formed and spat insults, even the defiance in his eyes. It all added up to such beauty as she had torn it all down. That chin had wobbled after she was done, every time she had entered the cell. The lips had pressed together in frightened silence. And those eyes, those big, beautiful blue eyes. They had watched her so carefully, lined with tears. They had watched her every move, every expression. It had been thrilling, that attention, and she had been sad to see him packed away on that Star Destroyer. She had comforted herself at the time with the thought that at least she would be able to see him when she brought prisoners to him.
Who knew? She had mused. Maybe she would start making an effort to bring people in alive more often. And then she had heard of the attack on the Star Destroyer and the loss of their little interrogator. Her heart had broken, along with several of her bones as she was punished. It hadn't mattered that the brat had been out of her care by that point. Darth Sidious had been displeased, and so everyone involved had suffered for it. And then this attack had started, and she had heard his sweet little voice again. Elation had mixed with the terror. Her work had not held up, but the boy was back. She could still fix this. She had found a group of the attackers and stolen one's voice. She had lured the boy away. He'd run, and she'd caught him. She'd isolated him. And then she'd gotten distracted. She'd felt the fear that had wafted off of him like a sweet scent, seen the shaky defiance in his eyes, and hadn't been able to resist lingering. And now she was here, on her knees, hands pressed uselessly against the charred and smoking hole that threaded through her guts, and staring up at the Jedi Knight that had fallen from the sky. Her lightsaber in pieces on either side of her, and armor shattered. Thunder rumbled through the air. Defiantly, she bared her teeth at the man.
"You think you've won?"
The man looked down at her with cold, distant anger that reminded her of the edge of a freshly sharpened knife.
"I know I've won. You'll never touch him again."
It hurt, but she laughed anyways. A harsh sound echoed by a crack of thunder. Looking past the Jedi, she saw the boy lying in the Mandalorian's arms and his leg lying several feet away.
"You really think that?"
She looked back at the Jedi.
"You really think that he'll forget all that I have done to him? That the memories will evaporate away like a bad dream?"
The Jedi's jaw clenched, and Seven laughed again.
"You will never forget me, Jedi. When he closes his eyes, when someone touches him, when someone speaks, memories of me will seep through."
It was hurting worse now, but Seven drew on that for strength.
"He will never forget what I did to him."
Fury, bright and blazing and yet not dark, flowed over her.
"Maybe that's true,"
the Jedi said, his voice serene and eyes furious, hefting his saber high.
"But even if it is, he'll always be able to reassure himself that you can't do it again."
Seven didn't want to die. But she couldn't do anything now as the lightsaber swung down, its burning power mimicked by the light surrounding its wielder. It lit up the shadows surrounding them, burning bright. And then, darkness.